Blog Talk Radio. Another day on Cosmic Citizen. This morning you're with me, Krystalyn Beek Larson, and my co-host, Andre Rodatis. Good morning, Andre.
Good morning, Krystalyn. How are you?
Just fabulous.
Good.
Another
good.
Beautiful day in Colorado.
And another beautiful day here in Quebec, in the Laurentians.
Is the sun shining where you are?
Believe it or not, it is. It's we're usually have a lot more rain than we've been getting, but it's a beautiful. It's probably going to get up to about 80 today, and blue sky, partly cloudy, gorgeous day.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Cosmic Citizen, and for those of you who haven't heard. We are welcoming Andre on as another co-host on our team. He's going to be with us on a regular basis. And Paula is off today. We wish Paula a wonderful day, weekend off, and I hope she's doing well. And I hope all of you are as well. This morning we're going to be continuing the discussion we had last week about the socialization of religion. And the art of living, what and how and why we need each other, and why we need to socialize that experience, our personal relationship with God, why that's something that we feel the need to share with one another. And last week we read the Art of Living section from the Rodin Papers. And this week we want to read a little bit more from paper 99, The Social Problems of Religion, and look at some of the pros and the cons to the process that we go through when we try to socialize our religion. And Andre, I believe that you've been studying this part of the book before we even talked about doing the program on this topic. Is that right?
That's right. It just happened to be in my sequential reading, as very often, I've often found these kinds of interesting coincidences occur. You know, the more one studies, the more opportunity there is for what one happens to be studying at the time to all of a sudden be interestingly relevant to something else that's going on. So, obviously with the show coming up, did a little bit of rereading. One thing that was very interesting that acts as a precursor to paper 99 is actually in the preceding paper, paper 98, in section 6, the first paragraph, you know, where they're talking about Mithraism and Christianity, and they just almost lob it out as a precursor to a preview of what's to come in paper 99 with this little ditty here. They're talking about, you know, some of the problems with the Roman imperial worship religion, and they say much as the Romans, their religious institutions lacked a powerful driving agency for the preservation of higher moral and spiritual values. Well, that doesn't make sense. That's interesting. That may be a bad thing in my electronic version. Yeah, it's really strange. Okay, let's read the next sentence. I hope this is okay. While it is true that the institutionalization of religion has usually detracted from its spiritual quality, it is also a fact that no religion has thus far succeeded in surviving without the aid of institutional organization of some degree, greater or lesser. And that's a right between the eyes kind of quote for me, because the idea I came out of my background in the Roman Catholic Church, and I'd sort of had enough of authorities telling me, you know, about hell and a lot of other things, and I pretty much started getting to the point of writing off institutional religion until finding, you know, the Urantia book and sort of warming up to it as we got through the papers. But this sort of underscores it. It's saying quite clearly it is not really possible for religion, that is the religion of personal experience, to thrive in a social milieu without there being some institutionalization, without there being some assistance. It's not like it has to be over-organized, but it at least needs to have some kind of organizational structure helping it along. And presumably, if people are minded that way, they're going to move that way together. But I thought that was an interesting kind of jump start for this discussion, because It can often be assumed that we need to do this completely informally, or it can be assumed on the other side that obviously we need to become a church. And I'm not sure that anything is obvious in terms of how this needs to evolve, and it'll be interesting to hear what our listeners might be able to put forward on that. So...
It is an interesting discussion, and it frequently comes up for Urantia book readers or for people who have rejected institutional religion or have walked away from a particular organized religion, to assume that kind of all organized religion is somehow deleterious to their spiritual growth. And, you know, I'm here to sort of say I think that there are many things that come from being involved with a religious organization that really expand our ability to get things done.
Yeah. Lou Bart posted effectively here, he said, every effective religion unerringly develops a worthy symbolism, and its devotees would do well to prevent the crystallization of such a ritual into cramping, deforming, and stifling stereotyped ceremonials, which can only handicap and retard all social, don't have the rest of the quote there, but you get the idea. Continuing, notwithstanding that the cult has always retarded social progress, it is regrettable that so many modern believers in moral standards and spiritual ideals have no adequate symbolism, no cult of mutual support. So these kinds of aspects of, you know, too much ceremonial on the one hand, but no symbolism on the other, there seems to be a somewhat fine line that the book is getting us to try to walk. So I don't know how you want to go forward, Crystalline. We can either go forward with a few more quotes or what.
Well, yes. One of the things that I've been looking for without any success so far is the place in the book where it talks about our need to create new rituals, new symbols that work for our sort of for our generation or for our age, our era. And, you know, I think that we take the best from that which has come before, but leaving out the things that have become really dogmatized or really crystallized or formalized, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
Or overly formalized. But in order to talk about, you know, what the problems of religion are, you know, it's good to talk first about, you know, what are some of the benefits. We talked a little bit about that last week, about the opportunity to create sort of social welfare to support neighborhood welfare, I think was the way we put it, and social service, the influence for moral stability and spiritual progression. But we know that we're in an age that is, as the Urantia book states, sort of teetering on the brink of a new and wonderful spiritual movement.
Uh-huh. They clearly, and of course, quivering on the brink, as they put it, it could easily be quivering for the next 1,000 years, as Brother Dave has pointed out, you know, in section 99, or rather paper 99, section 1, talking about, you know, things really not settling down for 1,000 years. That was speaking from 1935. Well, you know, that's prior to the dawning of the fourth millennium. So they could be talking about that, or they could be talking about just the next few hundred years. It's clear that we've been in flux for the last 60, 70, almost 80 years now. It's not quite 80 years with the revelation in, you know, given to us, and certainly a little bit less, just 60 years. Not quite 60 years with the revelation in print.
Well,
go ahead.
In paper 99, in section 1, it says that religion, well, actually, it's just in the introduction. It says religion did not approve the occasional social reforms of past centuries, but in the 20th century, it is of necessity called upon to face adjustment to extensive and continuing social reconstruction. Conditions of living alter so rapidly that institutional modifications must be greatly accelerated, and religion must accordingly quicken its adaptation to this new and ever-changing social order. And then it goes on to talk about religion and social reconstruction.
Now, one of the interesting things, you know, regarding this whole paper, and in fact, this whole set of papers, 99 through 103, is trying to understand when they're referring to religion in the collective sense and when they're referring to it in the personal sense. And of course, when the Urantia book is talking about religion, it's by and large referring to the spiritual experience that the individual religionist is having with God personally. And that is something other than what we typically think about when the average person in the English language hears the term religion. Immediately, most people think of institutional religion. So they do refer to that usage of religion in the paper from time to time, or at least the organizational aspect or social aspect of it. But one really needs to pay attention to the context in order to get that, because most of the time they are first and foremost focusing on how do we get more and more of you to have a personal relationship with God, you know, in the first place.
Well, and usually when they talk about religion, that is what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the sense that in this paper, it might not be exactly that.
Not as often, but still quite frequently. I mean, when we look at use of the term religion, for instance, just in that last section you read, you know, religion did approve the occasional social reforms of past centuries. That's clearly not personal religion.
Right.
But in the 20th century, it is of necessity called upon to face adjustment. Then it goes on, and the last usage, conditions of living alter so rapidly that institutional modifications must be greatly accelerated, and religion must accordingly quicken its adaptation to this new and ever-changing social order. Well, that second usage could refer to personal religion. It could be referring more to the individual's relationship with that, or at least collectively.
Let's talk about that in and of itself. As believers in the personal relationship with God being the actual definition of religion, and the human evolutionary aspects of religion as the socialized religion, how do we influence, how do we change those institutions to become more flexible, to become less crystallized and less dogmatic, without shaking the very foundations upon which they rest? I think if we look back at the 20th century, now that we're into the 21st century, we can see that the foundations of religion, at least in North America, I think we could also probably guess that it's been perhaps even more so throughout much of Western Europe, that many of those institutional organizations have really been all but abandoned. You know, there's certainly far less attendance in at least mainline Christianity and to some extent Catholicism throughout Europe than you would find in more of the evangelical wings that have really picked up some momentum in the last half of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And even now we find that some of those are being redesigned by their youth, you know, by those sort of in rebellion against them. to include a more personal experience, sort of like the emergent Christians have with their move to a less authoritarian form of socialization in their religion. What have you experienced, Andre?
Well, right here, I mean, just where I am in the province of Quebec is a perfect example of the decline of institutional religion. The Catholic Church for centuries held sway here and was very, very prominent, and of course still has a presence here, but church attendance is way, way, way down. Very few people, I wouldn't say that the majority are church going anymore, even if they were born and raised Roman Catholic. And now, say, a second generation away from that, I'm not sure how many people are being, you know, raised Catholic in this area. So you do see, say, the more flexible, less forms of institutional religion, and the Catholic Church, after all, is a lot more flexible these days. Not necessarily holding on to its adherents either. It's not really providing what people are looking for. And that's a very broad brush to paint this with, and I don't mean to disparage or in any way. But by contrast, for instance, there are small enclaves of Orthodox Jews, you know, in Montreal and further up here in the Laurentians. There's a colony or an enclave, maybe is a better term, where, you know, land has been bought and a community has been evolved. And because there's that strong adherence to Orthodox principles and that unquestioning attitude, they actually have a stronger, quote-unquote, religious community. They are keeping their next generation involved in that form of religion. The real issue that we have is as you said, with Christianity not having the same draw for the majority of the population in the culture that it used to serve almost exclusively, or maybe not exclusively, but predominantly, that is a better term, it clearly has lost sway with a large amount of the population and is only regaining sway by having that flexibility that you pointed out with the emergent Christian movement, which is subtly introducing to those that have sort of balked it at authoritarianism and ecclesiasticism in religion and really are not attracted to that, they are attracted to fellowship and being able to share personal spiritual experience, even if in a somewhat limited way, or even if only in the context of Christianity.
Well, the being attracted to fellowship is an interesting concept. It does seem to sort of burn in the hearts of even those who are busy rejecting institutional religion. They still feel the need to come together and share their beliefs. And I'm thinking of even within the very small group of Urantia book readers who have come together, which must be, I would assume, a fairly small percentage of the overall readers around the world who have actually organized themselves into any form of study group or society or association, or who attend conferences or workshops regional or national or international kinds of meetups. And those who expect or who think that when we congregate that we're all going to be like-minded.
Right.
We find that's not the case. We all share certain similarities. One of those similarities tends to be a very strong sense of independence and a rejection of authority, perhaps a sense of going our own way or doing things our own way, being perhaps even a little ultra-individualistic. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, part of the problem with institutional religion is it's not really keeping and holding strongly individualistic people. It's not keeping people interested that are able to think on their own. And that then, when you have a movement that does attract those kinds of people that are on the more individualistic end of the spectrum, that also doesn't necessarily conduce to a lot of fellowship, at least immediately, at least not until there's greater personal spirituality occurring within the movement. And we know that wasn't necessarily encouraged early on in our movement. It's definitely something that many, many more of us are thinking about now.
Well, let's see what Paper 99 has to say about religion and social reconstruction. While we invite our listeners to call in, we have myself, Krystalyn Beek Larson, and Andre Rodatis on the air, and we are talking about socialization of your religion or your personal religious experience. Why should we come together to share that with each other? And what does that process look like? And we're talking about Paper 99, The Social Problems of Religion. And if you'd like to join in the conversation, please give us a call at 646-716-8158. Again, that's 646-716-8158, and we'll try to get you on the air. If you want to speak with the host, please press 1. In the meantime, let's read on. Section 1 on religion and social reconstruction starts with mechanical inventions and the dissemination of knowledge are modifying civilization. Certain economic adjustments and social changes are imperative if cultural disaster is to be avoided. This new and oncoming social order will not settle down complacently for a millennium. The human race must become reconciled to a procession of changes, adjustments, and readjustments. Mankind is on the march towards a new and unrevealed planetary destiny. Religion must become a forceful influence for moral stability and spiritual progression, functioning dynamically in the midst of these ever-changing conditions and never-ending economic adjustments. Urantia society can never hope to settle down as in the past ages. The social ship has steamed out of the sheltered bays of established tradition, and has begun its cruise upon the high seas of evolutionary destiny. And the soul of man, as never before in world's history, needs carefully to scrutinize its charts of morality and painstakingly to observe the compass of religious guidance. The paramount mission of religion as a social influence is to stabilize the ideals of mankind during these dangerous times of transition from one phase of civilization to another, from one level of culture to another. Would you care to read on, or do you have some comments to interject on that?
Well, the only comment, obviously that millennium comment that Brother Dave in chat already, pointed to, that's an eye catcher. Considering how slowly things have evolved in the centuries prior to the 20th century, and mind you, things did begin to speed up already a little bit in the 19th century. But basically, you could count on religious forms, you could count on social forms not changing terribly much from generation to generation, and maybe only having major changes every 10 generations. And the Urantia book points out, I don't have the quote right here, but it does point out that we are going to have to make, and maybe right in our section as we come up to it, I read it recently, that we will need to make these adjustments every generation.
Almost every generation, sooner than every generation. As we stop being able to pass on that art of living from one generation to another, because culture is changing so quickly that one generation can no longer pass along those requisite educational experiences that the next generation needs in order to make a living or to adjust to the ever-changing culture, then
right.
We need to be much more flexible. And as we know, change is always challenging for society, not only for culture, but even for individuals. We have a couple of people waiting now on the line. Let me see if any of them want to speak with us. Hold on just a second. I believe, Skype, you're on the air with us. Hello? 111, you're on the air with us on Cosmic Citizen. Do you have anything to say, or would you like to just stay on hold and listen? All right, well, I'll try the other number. Neither of them have raised their hand to speak, so
sure.
We'll check and see. 720, you're on the air. Would you like to speak with the Cosmic Citizen today? You're welcome to continue listening, but we will remind our callers that we do have a limited number of lines, so if you do want to call, make sure you let us know right away. Bro Dave, was that you who called in? If so, please feel free to do so again. Anyway, continue with what you were reading then.
Sure. Well, the other thing that I was going to point out here is that when they say mankind is on the march toward a new and unrevealed planetary destiny, that's a pretty remarkable statement. What they're really saying is you can't really imagine what these changes are that are happening to your society any more than people 100 years ago could imagine an information age beginning to occur. Who would have ever believed that a business like LinkedIn or Facebook or Google would turn into a billion-dollar business? People couldn't imagine what just the material economics were, how that would monetize. In fact, there are plenty of these things that as they're being invented, nobody can imagine how they're going to be monetized. And in the same way, even if we leave the monetary aspect out, I don't think we fully appreciate how different cultural discourse can be, and what people can be interested in, and what they're actually interested in introducing as part of their economy. So that the interest, for instance, in values is probably going to be front and center 1,000 years from now, or at this point getting closer to 900 years from now, and even sooner than that. And that,
well,
that
it certainly shows the passion that the people have online for connecting with other like-minded people, and the ability to be able to actually socialize and to create communities online was greatly underestimated. I mean, obviously the phenomenon of Facebook and Google Groups and Twitter indicates that people really have this longing to have an ongoing and intimate connection with other people. And in this case now, it's other people from all over the world, not just the people in your neighborhood or the people in your town or state or region or territory, but province. But people from all around the world are joining in discussion groups and forums and connecting with each other in a very meaningful way that one could hardly have predicted even 10 years ago.
Very much so. And it's that lack of predictability. So if we see that 25 years ago, basically a generation, I could not predict something like Facebook or Google or anything like that, then just imagine now that we're talking about a span of approximately the next 940 years, or the next 920 years anyway. That's 37 more generations. And that means that about every 25 years, society is going to look different in ways that we couldn't imagine in the 25 years previously, and that's going to continue to happen at that pace about another 37 times, if we want to take it just literally, when they say that things are not going to settle down for a millennium. We can see how that begins then to incorporate the idea of a new and unrevealed planetary destiny. Add to that the idea that this is Michael of Nebadon's bestowal world, that this is a 1 in 10 million world that Michael had his bestowal experience, and it's clear that something unusual is intended here. We could get into the technicalities, and I won't go down a rabbit hole with talking about the Archangel Circuit, or the fact that the brilliant evening stars are you know, camped out on Gerasim, and all of that that's going on. It's really, really a matter that we know that they're focusing a lot of energy and on not only bringing us back into the fold out of isolation, but they're Michael has his hands directly on our planet. He has a special purpose for our planet, not to make us any kind of chosen people or anything, but to do something that can happen here because he was here. And that is unimaginable to us.
Well, let's go on a little bit with the section we were reading.
Sure.
Would you like to continue on with paragraph 4, the religion has no new duties?
Be glad to. Religion has no new duties to perform, but it is urgently called upon to function as a wise guide and experienced counselor in all of these new and rapidly changing human situations. Society is becoming more mechanical, more compact, more complex and more critically interdependent. Religion must function to prevent these new and intimate interassociations from becoming mutually retrogressive or even destructive. Religion must act as the cosmic salt, which prevents the ferments of progression from destroying the cultural savor of civilization. These new social relations and economic upheavals can result in lasting brotherhood only by the ministry of religion. And we can wonder there that they are clearly talking about personal religion, talking about our connection with God personally. A godless humanitarianism is, humanly speaking, a noble gesture. But true religion is the only power which can lastingly increase the responsiveness of one social group to the needs and sufferings of other groups. In the past, institutional religion could remain passive, while the upper strata of society turned a deaf ear to the sufferings and oppression of the helpless lower strata. But in modern times, these lower social orders are no longer so abjectly ignorant, nor so politically helpless.
Indeed, indeed. Well, we have a few more callers. Let's see if any of them would like to join in the conversation. 407, you're on the air with us with Cosmic Citizen.
Yes, I had a question about the whole issue of us choosing survival as opposed to death cosmically. Is that a decision that has to be made in the flesh before we die, or can that be made after we die in the flesh and are on the first mansion world?
That's a really good question. It's clear that we are making choices all the time. The authors would suggest that it is possible to make that decision here. There are many readers that have come to the opinion that very few people fully consecrate themselves to making that decision here in this life. But I think the answer is it is possible to make that decision here, as is evidenced by the fact that Enoch and Elijah fused. And even though Jesus of Nazareth was Michael of Nebadon, as a human being, he achieved what was necessary to seal his survival had he been purely human. But putting that aside, a lot of people will discount that example. Enoch and Elijah, who were purely human, did fuse in this life. They made that fully consecrated choice to always, forevermore, do the will of the Father. And at that point, and after achieving the full development through the psychic circles that one needs to do to get to that point, you have forever and irrevocably chosen to always, going forward, do the Father's will. And you will survive forevermore. In the same way...
I think there might be some people who can make that choice during this lifetime, but it's pretty hard for us to know.
Yeah,
with any certainty.
Through life without any real spirit, without any real consciousness about spirituality, and they're not bad people necessarily. And I was just wondering if when they get to the mansion world, if they still have a chance. It seems to me
I would think so.
I would think so, too, given the nature of God and the nature of the fact that he's love.
And can you give us your first name?
Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hang on just one second. I'm going to, we might continue this discussion later, but we have another person who's been holding for a while. I want to see if they'd like to join in our discussion.
Okay. I won't be able to stay on the phone very much longer. I have to leave, but...
Then I don't want to cut you off, but
Okay. Then I want to thank
you. Let me just interject then, Robert.
Yeah.
I agree with you entirely. As you know, a lot of us, I mean, because most of us don't fuse.
Yeah.
Most of us will have progressed as far as we've progressed and have made all kinds of choices back and forth, and clearly people that are interested in the Urantia book may be beginning to point their compass needle more toward true north, let's say.
Right.
And so the idea of surviving in the mansion worlds, clearly surviving on the mansion worlds is that added opportunity to make that fully consecrated choice. They're not just taking us because they think we're just on the verge of making the choice. They're
right.
taking us if we have any possibility of making the choice. The faintest flicker of faith is
that,
sufficient.
That's for the same reason they've delayed the trial, or whatever you want to call it, of those who followed the Lucifer Rebellion. They're trying to give them every... They said something about the wisdom of a delay in the book.
And
exactly.
Every opportunity for mercy.
Right. Well, thank you so much. You've answered my question.
You bet.
Well,
thank you very much
for calling in, Robert.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hello, Skype caller. You're on the air. Can you hear me? Our Skype caller is on the air. All right. Well, I'm going to just leave that line open. If you manage to get through, please feel free to join our conversation. And just introduce yourself with your first name, and we'll be happy to talk with you.
So that was... Go ahead.
720, you're on the air. Would you like to join us in the discussion today? Hello, 720.
Okay. Looks like we have people that just want to listen. I don't know that people know that they can listen after you've pressed the 1 in order to get into the queue. You can press the 1 again to be out of the queue and still be listening to the program. And it's fine regardless of what you're doing. We don't have that many callers calling in, but whatever you choose to do is fine that way. If you do want to talk, definitely be pressing 1 in order to be able to talk with us. Would you like me to read on?
Sure, please continue.
By the way, Robert's question is a great example of the socialization of religion. You know, we need our fellows to be able to discuss these things. We have questions that come from our inner life. We know we have a connection with God, but we may not have answers that are satisfying to the intellect. And so, depending not only on how we've internalized and interpreted our inner walk with God, if we do have the opportunity to vet those kinds of experiences and intellectual awarenesses against the revelation, we're then able to get clarity. And this is what the revelation is here for. It's here to clear up the muddle between our version of the outer life and our version of the inner life, and trying to compose the two into an art of living.
Indeed, indeed. We have one more caller. Hang on just a second. 603, you're with us on the air with Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, Crystal Lynn and Andre. This is Lou from New Hampshire.
Hi, Lou.
Hi, Lou.
How are you?
I felt so sorry every time you tried to get someone to talk, they weren't there or they evaporated or something.
They're still there, but they don't appear to want to talk.
I've been listening from the beginning, and I have some comments that go back to earlier subjects, but I want to catch up to the more recent one about having something to belong to, and this led to the Facebook and Google groups and that sort of thing. Andre was talking about the difference between the individual religionist and religion in general. And we who read the Urantia book know that Jesus has redefined religion to be an individual's relationship with God. The book sort of coined a phrase that most of us never heard before, religionist, and the religionist is clearly referring, again, to an individual. So when we Urantians get together among ourselves and we talk about religion, we kind of know we're talking about the individual's relationship to God. But when we get together with, I don't want to call them outsiders, but other people, and we throw out the word religion, we know what we mean, but it immediately brings up all the baggage they have with institutional religion. And this is something I think we have to watch out for, because they're immediately on the negative side of this. And believe me, we all know there's a lot to be negative about when it comes to institutional religions. Nonetheless, getting back to the wanting something to belong to, Crystalyn, you might remember some time ago, you and Paula and maybe even Andre Traversa put on a show about a Urantia religion, and you had two guests who made very compelling and cogent arguments for this case. I thought they did a really good job, but this is such a hot-button issue within the Urantia community that 99% of the callers, and in those days you got a lot more callers than you did today, of the callers were so totally against this, because all they could focus on was what the book says about the pitfalls of institutional religion rather than the benefits of a socialized religion. So there are arguments on both sides of the fence of this. And to some extent, the book has almost poisoned us about ordained priesthoods or sacraments or incense or candles or rituals or stained glass or all the smoke and mirrors and the hocus pocus, because we know and we believe that because a fragment of God literally indwells us, we have immediate, anywhere, anytime access to this guy, and we don't have to light incense, for example. Nonetheless, I have to say this in the same breath, nonetheless, the book also tells us that if the level of one's faith is such that all the hocus pocus helps to facilitate their approach to God, then let no man take that away from them. If this is what works for them, then God bless them. Let it be. So this is sort of a real hot potato, hot button issue. Should we formulate a religion among Urantians? Someone on the board, some very astute board member last week, when this question came up, typed in, well, Urantians just attend other faiths, other institutional services on Sundays to sort of take this place or fill this void. And I thought that was a very good answer. I know a lot of
Well, or Saturday too. Or Friday. I mean, I think we can't assume that all Urantia book readers are from a Christian background. We happen to know that we have large groups who are both Jewish and Muslim, come from that background. And we are expanding into Asia more and more these days, so we have more Hindus and Buddhists as well, Taoists, and possibly even people who had no religious background at all but grew up in a secular household.
And I have one more comment about attending such services, because it talks about the book talks about the benefits of group worship and how when you come out of such a ceremony or a mass or a ritual, whatever it is, everyone feels uplifted because there is great benefit in group worship. And I think this is something that maybe we as a community should somehow try to provide more access to among ourselves. I know for 10 years, once a week I drove an hour and a half to attend a study group, and this became my fellowship, my family, my church. It was the most important thing in the world to me, was this the fellowship with like-minded people. And even though another thing in the book that works against formulating a church, brick-and-mortar type church is it calls the kingdom of God an invisible brotherhood of believers. And that sort of gives us the nod to, okay, go out there and bumble around on your own. But the truth is we crave the fellowship and company of others. And I'll be
we
quiet.
Do.
I'll let other people talk.
Well, we do. And thank you very much for that, Lou. No, I think that, I appreciate your passion about it, too, because I think that's, it is what the world is missing. It's missing this kind of fellowship. And, you know, I know for myself, I get it in study groups, which I'm not getting right now. So I'm getting it vicariously over the web a lot. But I also participated in a group that practiced centering prayer. And for me, it was very, very important to get together once a week. We got together for an hour and a half, and we would watch a Father Thomas Keating tape, who is one of the founders of the practice of centering prayer, which Garth Jameson says is probably as close to one way that the word worship in the Urantia book could be interpreted. I don't think we need to be confined to that, but the point being, it is a worshipful experience. And after watching the tape, we would spend 20 minutes in meditation together, and after that, we would spend about 20 minutes just sharing how our week had gone briefly. And then we would close with a prayer and be done. That anchor in my week was very, very, very important to my solidity, especially, you know, when things were going rough in outer life. And let's face it, not everything is going so well in outer life all the time.
Well,
yep.
And that's actually a pretty good segue into the section two. It's where it talks about the weakness of institutional religion. And by institutional religion, we're talking about, you know, sort of the perhaps organized religion and different institutions of religion that many within this movement have either walked away from or temporarily segregated themselves from. But in paper 99, section 2, paragraph 1, it says, institutional religion cannot afford inspiration and provide leadership in this impending worldwide social reconstruction and economic reorganization because it has unfortunately become more or less of an organic part of the social order and economic system, which is designed to undergo reconstruction. Only the real religion of personal experience can function helpfully and creatively in the present crisis of civilization. Now, that is a very insightful phrase, one that I think too few churches, mosques, synagogues, temples are really aware of. And I think that crosses cultural lines. We're not just talking about North America here. We're talking about worldwide, that in almost every culture, whatever the institutionalized religion form has taken, it has become quite intrinsically a part of the social order. And unfortunately, in most cases, the economic order.
And when you buck that order, you come face to face with how many people have an investment in the order the way it is, and find you're bucking the order to be a threat to that. And so hence the dual phrases. And when I was reading this earlier, it struck me, well, provide leadership, I get that, you know, that's, you can't lead if you're kind of tethered down and held back by everybody. But neither can you afford inspiration. You can't afford to be inspiring those folks out there to be doing better, because they may leave you. And in fact, I think the Roman Catholic Church did a very, very good job in my generation of inspiring many of us to look further, to really take seriously looking for God. And
indeed.
And so I did. And it took me away from the church. It didn't
mm-hmm.
keep me in there.
So, we do have another caller. I want you to finish your thought, though.
No, it's okay. That's pretty much it. But I thought that was very insightful how this Melchizedek puts it, that it's not just providing leadership, it's affording inspiration.
Indeed.
It's almost like you're damned if you try to lead, and you're also damned if you try to inspire others to lead.
Yeah, like it says, the institutional religion is now caught in the stalemate of a vicious circle. It cannot reconstruct society without first reconstructing itself. And being so much an integral part of the established order, it cannot reconstruct itself until society has been radically reconstructed.
You know, I think with that statement, they're laying down the need, the possible need for something something super material to come in and sort of straighten that out, because we're in a vicious circle. The church is in a vicious circle with itself. And maybe, just maybe, as many anticipate, a visible presence of the next paradise magisterial or a vonal, or because we've had bestowal son, we couldn't even get a Trinity teacher son. We're so out of whack with the order of things. I think our problems are almost at such a point where we need this super material infusion, the next epical visitation, to sort of help us straighten things out, because things are seemingly hopelessly entangled. Exactly what you just read, the vicious circle here.
We have another caller.
Go ahead, bring them on, and let's just continue and have fun here.
Fish, you're on the air with us.
Hi, my name is Barry. I'm from Tennessee. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Barry.
Good.
Terrific.
Nice to hear you, Barry.
Welcome. Thanks for hanging in there.
Hey, thanks for letting me on the show. I have a this hits home a lot for me, what you guys are speaking of today, because I grew up in the Southeast, And my grandfather on my dad's side was a Church of Christ preacher for 50 some odd years in Georgia. And my dad was an elder and a preacher in the Church of Christ system as well, in this area, in the Chattanooga area, where I grew up, for 20 some odd years. And then, I found lately, especially the last 4 or 5 years, probably a little bit more than that. But at any rate, you know, once you have something kind of, I guess, for lack of better words, crammed down your throat,
right?
And you become to be you you get older and you're able to form your own opinions about things, and you see kind of really how things are going or really how things are ran and the discrepancies here and the discrepancies there. Granted, nothing is perfect, no matter what organization. And knowing that, especially from being in the Army for a while myself, nothing is perfect. I really was driven away from going to church in general because, and being more, and getting more on a more spiritual side of myself. And now people look at me funny when I say that here, especially in the quote unquote Bible Belt, of the Southeast. And, you know, they look at me funny. Well, either you're Baptist or you're a Church of Christ or you're a Church of God or what are you? Well, I don't really consider myself to be anything anymore because, you know, I've seen so many times, my parents have been together 51 years. They come home. When I first came home from the Army, I was injured and I had to stay with them for a while. I would go to church with them, to kind of please mom and dad kind of thing, you know, and I would see what would be going on, and I would see them come home and I would see them hear them make comments about, well, did you not notice that this person wasn't there today or this person wasn't there today or blah, blah, blah. It was almost like they were making themselves bigger because they showed up and they were seen.
Oh.
And and that type of attitude is, as much as I love my mom and dad, I don't get me wrong, I was raised very well. I have two brothers that are 12 and 14 years older than me. I was we joke around about I was the oops of the family. You know, I always ask them if I was really adopted, but I look way too much like my mom and dad. They've got a lot of Cherokee Indian in them. We're all very olive complected and all of that. But I look way too much like my mother and my father, so there's no way. But we always joke around about that because of the age differences. But I'll just put it I'll put it this way. You know, among a lot of other things. What really drove me away from organized or going to a building to get what I needed out of a higher being or God or whatever, you know, a lot of people will try to put it in, you know, whatever form or whatever word they want to put it in. And that's their, of course, you live in the United States, that's their prerogative to do whatever they want to do as far as what they call it. I still believe in God. I still believe that there is a God, but I don't necessarily think that you have to go to a building and be, on a regular basis to have a belief system. Now that might seem a little off to a lot of people, especially here, like I said, here in the Southeast, it's a big, either you are or you aren't. Okay. If you're not, you're an atheist. If you are, then you belong to so-and-so church, and I saw you there last week, or whatever the case is. It's pretty disappointing, to be honest with you.
Well
it sure
I can understand the frustration that you're feeling, Barry, and I know that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of other youths who are in some ways rebelling against that social order in that part of the country, because we have a lot of participation in the emergent Christian movement from your demographic. Just last week or 2 weeks ago, there was a Wild Goose Festival in, I believe, Virginia or North Carolina, where some of Paula, who's one of our regular co-hosts, she attended that event, and the Arantia group sponsored a booth there and helped sponsor the event. There were several hundreds of young people there who, like yourself, were frustrated with the institutional religion in the region.
Right.
And if you go online and you look up Emergent Village, you can find cohort groups all around the South where people are meeting and sharing their passion for God, their passion for faith, in many cases their passion for Jesus and his teachings,
mm-hmm.
without all of the extraneous dogma and ecclesiastical authority that went along with some of the more familiar sort of Bible Belt attitudes.
Right. You know, and that's to me, that's the biggest part that's tough for me, because that's the way I was raised. I was raised around this sort of thing. And, of course, you know, any habit is hard to break, but especially growing up in a specific belief system, that's been passed on from generation to generation. And, you know, just hearing what I heard all my life and being and getting in this mode of, okay, we've got to go this time, but it's only going to be for 45 minutes. You have four songs, a 15 minutes, scripture reading or sermon from someone, and then a couple more songs, a prayer, and see you later,
mm-hmm.
you know, but just as long as you were seen there and the people still believe that you believe what they believe, then you're accepted. You know, and I just have too many ways. I guess my mom and dad kind of look at me funny when I tell them, and they have accepted the fact that I have my own opinion, and they honor that and they trust that I still believe in God and I still believe in a higher power. We don't discuss it anymore. When I first, you know, when I first decided to open up to, especially my father, who is more set in his ways, I decided to tell him. It took me a year. It also took my middle brother a year to tell him that he wasn't going to Church of Christ anymore, that he was going to a non-denominational church in Atlanta. So, you know, that's kind of how we look at our father, is like, we don't want to let him down. But it was just because of the way we were raised. And I'm not saying anything. I don't want to get anybody wrong that's listening, or you guys at all. I don't want to say anything that there's anything wrong with. If you're comfortable and you get something out of going to a church and going to a specific service, say just maybe even on Sunday mornings or Sunday nights or Wednesday nights or whenever it is, if that's your thing, then that's fantastic. If that's
sure.
if you honestly, genuinely get something out of it, there's positives to be said about a lot of things as well. I mean, I'm not completely downing organized religion. I'm just saying that in my experience, you know, and seeing and kind of hearing my mom and dad's beliefs, you know, just what they would gossip about while we were trying to have lunch after church was over at our house, you know, when I was having to stay with them, it kind of brought me down. I felt like I wanted to lash out and say, hey, what are y'all talking about? What do you mean? You know, just we'll give these people a call and ask them why they weren't there, or at least not. Don't even do that. Don't infringe on them. You know, maybe just ask them if they're okay, and
right.
show that you're genuinely care. Instead
and
of
some ministers do get involved in that way with their congregation. If people are missing
yeah.
for a few weeks, they'll call
right.
to see if everything's okay.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there is a sense of community and a sense of tradition that many, many thousands of people, especially from some of our older generations, who really depend on that as a real part of their connection with God. And even though they might be not participating in the conversation that goes on, they might still be really enhancing their personal relationship with God
right.
through the experience of worshiping in that building with those other familiar faces. I think also, I don't want to lump all churches into any one category, because each one is really a different experience,
right.
even within the same religious tradition. For example, even within the Church of Christ, you probably have different experiences with different pastors. I know
Absolutely.
that was true for my grandparents, who had started out in a Methodist church, and then they ended up going to the Presbyterian church across the street because they liked the minister better. And then when they changed ministers, they found themselves moving back to the Presbyterian church because I think my grandfather said the singing just sounded better in tune. Or, you know, it was like you never know what it is that rocks somebody's boat. I know that.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was trying to go with that.
My mom and her husband have been, my stepdad has been an elder with the Methodist Church in Boulder for many years. And they belong to an adult forum that meets before the worship service every Sunday. And I think it was my mom who started the process of sharing each week or each month, having one of the other members of the forum group share their life story during that forum meeting. And one by one, they went around the group. And in some cases, these people had been worshiping together for almost their entire adult lifetime, some of them even since they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
they didn't know anything about each other's real life story.
Wow.
Last week, Paula shared her experience of being a part of the General Council with the Urantia Book Fellowship, and how when they gather to deliberate about administrative issues that they have a ritual of going around the room and each person telling everybody else in the room kind of what's been going on in their life over the last year and catching up with each other socially and how that ritual has really changed the dynamic of the group, that people tend to be much warmer and friendlier towards each other, even when they have vehement disagreements politically.
Are they more unified in a sense because of being able to share
experience,
like that?
Yeah, after that experience, that it appears to be more unifying. And I know in my mom's case at her church, she said that this process of sharing their biography with each other has really been, or their autobiography, has really brought them much closer together as a group. So I think one of the things I noticed in my experience with the emergent Christian worship experiences is that they also tend to be far more personal, much more interactive, much less pulpit directed, and much more of a sort of sitting around the living room having a discussion group. And for your Rancho Book readers, although each study group around the world has its own flavor, that is one of the things that is, you know, is held in common for most study groups, is the fact that there's no particularly designated leader. Everybody sort of has an equal opportunity to share their opinions and to read out loud and to discuss what they're reading.
Wow.
But, you know, we have to be aware that in the process of old ideas or old traditions and rituals falling away, they need to be replaced by new and better or more socially appropriate rituals for that generation. And we don't always know what those socially appropriate rituals are.
Until we try. Until we try them out.
I agree with him. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with both of you. You know, I've tried a lot of different things since I kind of broke away from going on a regular basis to, you know, to a specific church or to a building, whatnot. I've gotten married since I got back medically chaptered out from the Army after getting hurt over in Afghanistan. And I'm very lucky that I'm all in one piece. I had a head injury and a back injury. It caused me to be epileptic. So there's a lot of things that I'm very, as far as being able to go out and venture out into different things and different situations, I'm very limited because I can't drive. Now, whose fault is that? Nobody's. Okay, I don't blame that on anyone, and I don't want a pity party for that and all of that mess. My wife, she goes with her parents, and she just does it kind of, again, and we've even talked about this, even just being married a little over 2.5 years, she does it kind of to pacify them. And I told her, look, that's what I did for my parents for the longest time, I wasn't getting anything out of it. Are you getting something out of this? And she says, well, yeah, some days and some days not. So at least she's being honest with me and she's telling me what's going on, you know, but I don't want to take too much more of your show, but I just want to say one more real quick thing to kind of end. And thank you for letting me on the air, by the way. You know, I really feel like that people are just the more that they think about things, if you think about things too much, more confused you can be. You just go with what is good for you and go with what makes you feel like you're getting the most out of either a meditation or a prayer or your time, quote unquote, with God, whether it be in a church or in your home where I'm kind of homebound, you know, unless I put my wheelchair in it, you know, because of my cracked L5, I have to be in a wheelchair a lot of times. So I'm putting the wheelchair in the back of the Jeep, and I go with my wife, which most of the time it's less than more, you know, it's less than none. I mean, I don't go that.
Right.
You know, so.
Well,
but
I'm right there,
you know,
with you. I'm not totally housebound, but I'm disabled also, and I have
right.
a real problem with riding in the car.
Yeah,
I
so
had
you know
an
what
auto
I mean.
Accident several decades ago, and as
yeah.
I aged, it had a greater and greater impact on my neck.
Right.
And so just riding in the car can just be a really painful experience, and it will frequently bring on neurological challenges later on in the day. So I understand where you are, and I'm a very extroverted person. And so for me to be housebound is something that would cause me a great deal of frustration
yes.
if I didn't have so many other outlets, like, for example, this radio program.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to ask you before you go, Barry,
yeah.
have you found any other social groups that you've been able to meet with virtually?
Virtually you mean just on the internet, right?
Either on the internet or through Skype or over the phone.
Well, yeah, I've actually found a now this is just a once a week thing, and it only lasts for 30 minutes, and it's on the internet. Now, I'm not really connected with the Veterans Administration because I don't get VA benefits right now. That's a whole other story because I came home to some messed up paperwork. Imagine that. But at any rate, happens to a lot of people. But at any rate,
my husband's going through that right now.
There you go.
We
so
speak,
we have a lot
so.
More in common. We have a lot more in common than I thought. I'm dealing with that. But at any rate, it's a VA forum kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where a lot of veterans get together and talk about their beliefs and kind of open up and do it's a chat room, more of a chat room kind of thing. It's open to the public. And if I knew the actual – I don't want to give anybody the wrong website, but next time you have a show, maybe I can come back on and post it, at least post
sure.
it on the chat room. Maybe I can go find it, and before you get off the air, I can post it on the chat room if that would be okay.
Sure.
Beautiful.
I'd also like to
yeah,
have
that, – pretty much the one thing a week that I rely on as far as talking with people that kind of can relate to me as far as being deployed 5 times, being in a Ranger unit, getting dropped off in hairy spots pretty much every time, going through a whole lot, but being able to handle it pretty well, enough to just not completely give up on a higher power, God, whatever, Jesus, you know, whatever name you want to put in that blank, and I hate to put it that way. I feel so. See, I'm getting drawn back into my family thing now because I don't like to not say a specific word. But you know, I'll just say God. You know, not being able to get in touch with God, and at least once a week by people that can understand kind of where I'm coming from as far as another perspective as well. So I definitely
now,
do that.
Are you someone who has been a student of the Arantia book at all, or are you just sort of passing
that
by
is
our?
No, I was drawn to your show for a reason, and it was to call in and talk to you guys about this, because this is something I've been wanting to talk to someone else that had this up on their forum as far as the subject matter.
The socialization experience.
Exactly.
Being with other people to share your faith.
Right. And that goes along with what I was just talking about, and that's that chat site that I can get into once a week. Now, they're looking at
if you want, before you get off the air,
yeah.
Do you know how to send a private message on Blog Talk?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Why don't you go ahead and send me, as a Cosmic Citizen, just send me your, actually, what I'll do is I'll give you my email address.
Okay.
And, you know, we can probably talk off the air, and I can give you sort of a whole host of resources in addition to Blog Talk Radio, which is a wonderful resource for this type of sharing. We're here every Saturday morning from 10 to noon Mountain Time. Or in your case, are you Eastern or Midwestern?
We're actually on Central. We're right in
Central,
the
Central. Central
yeah,
time.
Right in the middle of Tennessee. Yeah, yeah. I'm right on the.
Okay,
right
so
on
that would
edge.
Be from 11 to 1 your time. We're here
okay.
every Saturday.
Okay.
And you're welcome to join us for a variety of different conversations like this. But also, we can get you in touch with different study groups that
absolutely
will be discussing similar things to this, as well as different emergent Christian groups that you might find fit really well for you right now.
That would be wonderful.
Some of them might be located in your neck of the woods.
Right.
And some of them might be ones that you can connect with just online.
Right. And I'm pretty much open to anything at this point, as far as being able to get that experience that a lot of people talk about that they get while they, you know, when they attend church or when they attend a specific meeting or whatever the case may be. I'm wide open pretty much to a lot of different things that I was never wide open to before. So I think in a sense that kind of makes my will a little bit stronger. And not being closed down to that one organism, you know, for lack of better ways to put it.
Sure.
Or that one form
it
of
is, you know, I think that's a really appropriate thing to call it. It is sort of like an organism. An organization or an institute functions in many ways sort of like a collective organism.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, there might be ways, like my mom and stepdad had an opportunity to influence their local established institutional organization religion. They also have a new pastor there who's very open to their ideas. They also happen to have a Urantia book study group going on there at that church
oh, wow.
on Friday nights with a teacher by the name of Chris Halverson who's a physicist who's a scientist who teaches a very comprehensive class on the Urantia book. There are also several virtual study groups if you end up getting interested in that. For some people who haven't ever heard of the Urantia book, it claims to be a new, new testament, if you will, for the 20th century and beyond. It
okay.
has a much more expanded God concept and
okay.
a much more expanded view of the universe and our place in it. And the last almost half of the book is the biography of the life and teachings of Jesus.
Okay.
And it includes from birth to death and all the missing years that are not covered in the New Testament. For most people who have a Christian background who
mm-hmm.
then read that section, they find that they're really meeting the Jesus that they already knew, the Jesus that they know, but
right.
from a little bit broader perspective. There are some things in the Urantia book that might shake the foundation of some more traditional Christian theology.
Uh-huh.
And there's some that will really support the ideas that Jesus shared that many people really resonated with.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
it's definitely up to you, you know, to respond or to react to it, you know, in your own authentic personal way. You know, for some people, it's just the answer they were looking for. For other people, it's just a little too far out there.
Right.
Well,
that's definitely one thing for me. I'm not too far out there at this point, and it doesn't have anything to do with something that happened overnight. It just was a growing consciousness of hey, this isn't exactly what I get the most out of. I don't know if I believe what they now. I believe what they believe, but in a way, but I'm my own person. Why can I not branch out? Why do I have to stick with my family beliefs and still be accepted into my family? Well, I learned
mm-hmm.
pretty quickly that wasn't the case. I didn't have to you know, my parents still accept me as their son. They love me to death. I go over and, I mean, joke around, and we have a great time. And they live 20 minutes down. I live in the Cumberland Mountains on the Trail of Tears. I mean, we,
It's familiar, beautiful. Very familiar with that area.
Yeah. It's
beautiful,
very
area.
Gorgeous. Oh, it's gorgeous. People don't know any that the good thing about it is it's kind of a hidden place. I mean, you know, not a lot of people it's the state park down the road. It's called Fall Creek Falls, and it's got about 170-foot drop of falls. And, I mean, that's where I go and do a lot of my meditation, especially during the summer. My
I'm actually familiar with that area.
Oh, all right. Yeah. See, you know, so you know how beautiful it is. My wife is a teacher, so especially right now up until the end of next week anyway when she has to go back for in-service, she, you know, when she has her summers off, we try to go down there and take at least two out of our – 7 dogs that we have to go down there and go swimming. And so we got a house full of dogs. We don't have kids yet, but our dogs are our kids right now. But at any rate, it's a trip. It's funny. Two St. Bernards, Great Pyrenees, a great German Shepherd, and then 3 poodles of all things. So, but at any rate, you know,
if you can hang on the air with us, we would love to have you with us for the rest of the show. We've only got about a half an hour left, and I'd like to read a little bit more of the paper that we're reading on the social problems of religion, and hopefully get to some of the more positive solutions to some of these problems.
Sure,
that
and
this
if
section,
for any reason whatsoever I accidentally get cut off or anything like that, it's because there's thunderstorms rolling through right now. As you know, probably in this area, there's humidity like no other at this time of the year. And thunderstorms will pop up all day long, and we've already had some today. So for any reason whatsoever I get cut off, it's not on purpose. But
Barry, make sure you send me your email address on our little chat, okay?
Absolutely. I'm going to right now. Thank you so much for letting me on the air. I greatly appreciate
it. I'm so pleased that you called in, and I'd love to keep in touch.
Thanks again.
It's a pleasure, Barry.
And Lou, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I thought he was a really good call-in guest, very articulate, and I think it was masterful the way you led him into the book. Good job, Crystalline.
Well, let's read on a little bit more. We're looking at paper 99 in the Urantia book, The Social Problems of Religion. We're reading section 2, paragraph 3. Andre, would you like to continue reading?
Sure. Paragraph 3, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Religionists must function in society, in industry, and in politics as individuals, not as groups, parties, or institutions. A religious group which presumes to function as such, apart from religious activities, immediately becomes a political party, an economic organization, or a social institution. Religious collectivism must confine its efforts to the furtherance of religious causes. Religionists are of no more value in the tasks of social reconstruction than non-religionists, except insofar as their religion has conferred upon them enhanced cosmic foresight and endowed them with that superior social wisdom which is born of the sincere desire to love God supremely and to love every man as a brother in the heavenly kingdom. An ideal social order is that in which every man loves his neighbor as he loves himself. The institutionalized church may have appeared to serve society in the past by glorifying the established political and economic orders, but it must speedily see such action if it is to survive. Its only proper attitude consists in the teaching of nonviolence, the doctrine of peaceful evolution in the place of violent revolution, peace on earth, and goodwill among all men. Modern religion finds it difficult to adjust its attitude toward the rapidly shifting social changes only because it has permitted itself to become so thoroughly traditionalized, dogmatized, and institutionalized. The religion of living experience finds no difficulty in keeping ahead of these social developments and economic upheavals, amid which it ever functions as a moral stabilizer, social guide, and spiritual pilot. True religion carries over from one age to another the worthwhile culture and that wisdom which is born of the experience of knowing God and striving to be like Him.
Wow, now, well, that's a great, great paragraph.
Yeah, what strikes me, and there's a wonderful principle in the Urantia book. I love various places in the Urantia book that you can distill certain principles. And one of the principles in the Urantia book that I love is the principle that when you choose the greater thing, the lesser is included. And that's encapsulated in this first part of paragraph 3. Religionists must function in society and industry and in politics as individuals, not as groups, parties, or institutions. You know, it's important for us to do that. And elsewhere it says it even better, that, you know, when we're part of those institutions as individuals, we may well become leaders of those of various parts of those institutions. And we see that over and over again when people are, you know, impassionately, you know, fired up by God and decide that this is my mission. This is what I will end up doing with that. The other side, the corollary to that is, when you choose the lesser thing, the greater is excluded. So that's exactly what they're saying here. Religion is the higher, the greater thing. When you subordinate that cause by associating it with a social, a political, or an economic cause, you have ennobled the lesser cause, perhaps, but you have completely excluded the greater cause. You're not going to have religion be part of what's functioning there. You are not going to be enhancing people's spiritual relationship with God. Whereas,
right. And that's really the most critical thing, because by eliminating that critical channel, you're really cutting yourself off from authentic personal growth. And
yes, you are.
It, you know, Chris Halverson talks about that, you know, about what it means to have that mystery monitor, that thought adjuster, that spark of God within, moving and shaking in your life. And
yes,
we are basically the channels through which that spark of God gets to move and shake within the culture and the community. And if we stifle that, in whether it's by our ideas or by our associations, we're not really giving it free rein to giving God free rein to evolve through us and around us.
I agree. If we need that spiritual energy, first of all, to keep our motivations, our attitudes, our evaluations fresh and living.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, what we tend to do is we tend to fossilize what our faith is into a creed. We try to make it static. The intellect tries to get hold of it in order to get control of it. And we're not called. We're called rather to allow God to transform us from the inside. That is easier said than done.
Become really fear dominated or doubt dominated. You know, one of the other things that we're repeatedly told is, you know, the only real struggle we have is the struggle against doubt. And,
yes,
you know, fear sort of falls into that. And I love this line here, you know, where it says that, you know, the religion of living experience finds no difficulty in keeping ahead of all these social developments and economic upheavals, amid which it ever functions as a moral stabilizer, social guide, and spiritual pilot. it's so, so crucial to have that. And again, in talking about the benefits of socialized religion, being able to share those experiences with our fellows is so crucial to making us feel connected, not only connected to God, but connected to the family of God.
Absolutely. We're being, you know, when we're talking about that, it was interesting that you brought that up and reiterated that. I was thinking about that. Goodness gracious. You know, when we're talking about true religion, we're always talking really about allowing the thought adjuster freer rein, whether
mm-hmm.
consciously or unconsciously. And so when you
And I think mostly it is unconscious. I mean, we're told, at least at this stage, mostly it's unconscious. But some of the ways it works is just by how our interaction with other people.
That is correct. Yeah, it's happening in the realms of the superconscious, they tell us, in that unconscious that is above our consciousness, that is tethered to spiritual reality above, as opposed to rooted in animal reality below. And
speaking of interacting, I know I'm interrupting you, but we're running out of time. We have another caller who's been on hold for almost 10 minutes. So
go for it.
Let me give him an opportunity, or him or her an opportunity to talk. 575, you're on the air with us on Cosmic Citizen. Are you still there?
I'm still here, Lars. Thank you.
Well, can you tell us your first name?
Yeah, it's Jimmy, and I live here
Hi,
in New
Jimmy.
Mexico.
Hey,
Hi,
Jimmy.
Hello, Jimmy.
It's been a great show today.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're enjoying
it. And Andre,
it.
Hello. I've been enjoying your contribution, Andre. It's been
well,
very enlightening.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. Yeah, this is just the wonderful fodder that the Arantia book gives us to run with and allows us to better our thinking on so many different issues. And this is one of the paramount issues that we need to do. What are your thoughts?
Oh, well, you know, I just was really taken by Barry's call, you know, and it's just a wonderful experience hearing someone waking up spiritually, you know, pulling out of the bonds of dogma there in the organized churches in the Southeast that he grew up in. Yeah, because I grew up in sort of the same situation, and even now, I'm ostracized by my sister. I'm persona non grata because I don't go to church every Sunday and every Wednesday, and I don't go through the ritual. I don't show up. I don't embrace, you know, the same thought processes that they do. You know, so it was really good hearing Barry call, you know, and to hear him. Taking responsibility for his own spiritual growth. And, you know, we have to do it in a loving way. And I'm saddened that my sister won't talk with me because I don't believe the same way she does. But, you know, there are other issues involving family that contributes to the ostracization, I guess you could call it. But it's still, bottom line is, I don't believe the same way they do. So I'm pretty much isolated as a consequence. You know, I think a lot of people do go to churches for the socialization, and even a lot of people go to drum up business for their company.
Sure,
oh,
they
yeah,
do.
Definitely.
There are all
yeah.
kinds
so
of motivations
it's
for
a,
that.
It's a great place for political action.
Sure.
You know, getting people to vote for you if you're a politician, or getting
oh,
you
wow.
to vote against somebody if you know the person.
Or even going to war, even going to war
behind the pulpit
and,
thinks so. It's often used for many of these things that we were just talking about, the kinds of things that the invisible brotherhood or the kingdom should stay out of.
Exactly, you know, and Barry could see through it. I could see through it, you know, and even now, you know, when I happen to pass across an evangelist or on TV, preaching. It's just such a show. Theatrics and fear and hatred towards, you know, Muslims or whatever, and holding up Israel and the Jews as the chosen people, and they've got to dominate the planet, and we've got to get behind them and be their gophers. And it's all about that killing, and I can't relate to it. So
I have very close family friend, someone we've pretty much adopted as a member of our family, and she's from the Middle East, and she's been in Colorado, in Boulder, working on a master's and a doctorate, and she works in a engineering firm where she's the only, not only is she the only Middle Eastern or Muslim person there, she's also the only woman in the entire organization.
Oh. Does she wear the
garb? No, she dresses with in Western gear, and she's been so ostracized by her company. She's been so maligned by her boss and by her fellow workers. She just can't do it anymore. She just recently.
It's so sad that people could
resigned,
be so
unspiritual. And she's planning to move out of the U.S. and planning to move possibly to Europe or another Middle Eastern country, because she says it got to be just too painful a struggle for her.
Bless her
and
heart.
She's a very progressive thinker. She's a very passionate religionist, but she's
sounds
not
like
someone who's involved in the more fundamentalist movements of Islam. But she's very involved in the Sufi community in Boulder, because that's sort of the only place she's found expression for her faith. She's far more faith directed than the majority of Christians that she hangs out with, or than a lot of the other New Age religionists, because one of the benefits of Islam is the level of devotion that it requires of their believers. You know, they pray five times a day, and God really does direct pretty much all areas of their life. And she's definitely involved to that extent. But her education and her exposure to many different cultures have definitely sort of brought her into the 21st century. And she's feeling like she can't go home. She can't go home again to that ecclesiastical authority and the political authority with which her culture is struggling. But she also,
like Louisiana for me.
Yeah. She also can't find a place here.
So, Jimmy, what that does, that brings up for me, I understand that kind of isolation. Just like Barry was sharing, one thing I didn't share while he was there was my first experience as a solo reader. When I first found the Urantia book, I was a solo reader for about my first 2 years. And the first community that I was actually associated with, I wasn't part of the community, but I was in such a small little town, actually a village of Church of Christ people, I was really with them most of the time. I worked with them.
Which is the church that his family is involved in.
That's right.
And I have good friends at the Church of Christ, and I've gone to quite a few of the gatherings with them.
Yeah,
they don't have music in their service. They don't have piano or anything in their service.
No dancing. And the true believers don't even have their own church building. They'll use a town hall, or they'll use some other building. The way the congregation that I was involved with would do. But the point here is that, you know, and they were very fervent believers, loved God. But with regard to that intellectual aspect, if you weren't on the same page, you know, that was associated immediately with the devil, and that idea of never quite being a part of that community, never being quite invited in, or, you know, wondering, well, how long is he going to take? And, you know, because there was always an assumption of conversion. There was always the background assumption. Well, you know, if we show him enough love, maybe he'll convert.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm getting at here with this is that I understand that sense of isolation. And one of the things that it took years of association with the Urantia book and having, you know, at least the limited fellowship that we get to enjoy with each other. But at some point it occurred to me, you know, I don't have to be on this defensive. They're not right about what they believe about me being on the outs with God. I know in mm-hmm. my heart, in my spiritual life, that I have a true connection with God. They may be able to pull out, you know, Bible chapter and verse, and, you know, to refute things, but it really ends up being the argumentative defense of a proposition which is inversely proportional to the truth contained. A wonderful phrase out of the Urantia book that really says it as it is, or as Shakespeare put it, "Methinks thou dost protest too much." You know, when mm-hmm. when people are telling you too much that you're doing the wrong thing and arguing and having to argue, then maybe there's not as much truth in what they're saying as they would lead you to believe. Maybe their conviction is not so much conviction and more fear. And we understand mm-hmm. that, you know, where there's that whole pallor of hell in the background of a lot of people's thinking, the fear that the devil may get me, I may lose the favor of God. Well, this is from what is revealed in the Urantia book, but more importantly, what anybody can get in their own personal spiritual experience with God if they just approach God on this level. You know, if I understand God to be loving, I get that corroborated in my experience. If I choose to reflect on God that way, and then I choose to serve my fellows, I see that kind of appreciation really works. And it completely diffuses everything that can be said from the outside. So this is sort of a long-winded way of getting around to saying, you know, Jesus once exhorted his followers, why, instead of being so timid about your faith, do you not take your faith to others by spiritual assault? And he didn't mean to club people over the head with a book or anything like that, but he did mean that, you know,
by holding up the holy.
Right, have the courage of your convictions, not to put too fine a point on this, but saying, you know, just at least start getting comfortable with the idea that, you know, you are in partnership with God here. Trust that, even if it socially feels painful at first.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually you are going to get used to the fact that they don't have a real solid answer against you going directly inside
to
your experience
right.
with the immanent God, or outside to your experience with the transcendent God, either one. You know,
well, that's also a good transition here to, I hate to move this along, we're down to less than 10 minutes and we've barely gotten through section 3 on the paper we wanted to look at today. So I'm going to just interrupt you, Andre, and say I'd like to read on paper 99, section 3 of the Urantia book. We're looking at paragraph 7. The great weakness of all this unrecognized and unconscious type of religious activity is that it is unable to profit from open religious criticism and thereby attain to profitable levels of self-correction. It is a fact that religion does not grow unless it is disciplined by constructive criticism, amplified by philosophy, purified by science, and nourished by loyal fellowship. There it is again. There is always the great danger that religion will become distorted and perverted into the pursuit of false goals, as when in times of war, like you were just mm-hmm. mentioning, each contending nation prostitutes its religion into military propaganda. Loveless zeal is always harmless, is always harmful to religion, while persecution diverts activities of religion into the achievement of some sociologic or theologic drive. Religion can be kept free from unholy secular alliances only by, one, a critical corrective philosophy, two, freedom from all social, economic, and political alliances, three, creative, comforting, and love-expanding fellowships. Four, progressive enhancement of spiritual insight and the appreciation of cosmic values. Five, prevention of fanaticism by the compensations of the scientific mental attitude. I will just intervene and, say, spiritualized thinking and critical thinking, something that's often missing from many of our traditional religious discussions.
Yeah, goes
on to say religion is
spiritual thinking.
Pardon me?
It's long-term. I would just go throw in that we have to realize that spiritual thinking is a long-term perspective,
indeed.
Not short-term gratification or whatever.
It's not short-term, and it's not exclusive of taking into account other people's ideas and thoughts and realizing, there are a lot of different ways to think about this, even if we do have the same goals.
And truth is growing all the time. It's never stagnant.
Right, it's living.
Yeah,
goes
living.
On to say, religionists as a group must never concern themselves with anything but religion. Albeit, any one such religionist as an individual citizen may become the outstanding leader of some social, economic, or political reconstruction movement. I think that's a really critical paragraph right there.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
very,
that's what
very
I was crucial. Alluding to earlier.
So much
the
idea
that
today.
Individual that's going to do this. Go ahead, Jimmy. I'm walking over you. Sorry.
No, I'm just saying that paragraph so much applies to today, what we're seeing going on today and around us.
Exactly. And it says it's the business of religion to create, sustain, and inspire such a cosmic loyalty in the individual citizen as will direct him to the achievement of success in the advancement of all these difficult but desirable social services. Now, I think this is a fairly good place to stop because the next section four, talks about transition difficulties. The transition
sure.
difficulties are definitely where we find ourselves currently, and I suspect we will be in that position of transition difficulties for quite some time. And
yeah,
I'm hoping.
And Barry and myself.
Pardon me?
I said, as Barry and myself are attesting to today.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And
well,
I'm hoping
and we're
that
all
we
in
can
that transition difficulty.
I'm hoping that we can use the last 2 weeks as a springboard into this topic for next week, because this is such a huge area of discussion for our extended community. We can see that we're all so enmeshed in this transition difficulty phase. In fact, I would take it a step farther to say, our whole entire generation has been greatly affected by this transition difficulty in terms of finding our place in the world, finding a way, an appropriate way to make a living. Navigating the confusing aspects of marriage and family relationships, trying to determine how we're going to respond to the ever-changing socio and economic situations, as well as political problems we find ourselves in.
Well, in the last 55 seconds that we have here, I'm going to just say that that'll be a wonderful jumping off point next week to deal with those transition difficulties. And I appreciate everybody who called in, and people on the board. It's been some lively discussion going on, and this is all great fellowship for me. So thank you all, and thank you, Crystalline, and I'll toss it to you.
Thanks for letting me call in.
You bet.
Pardon me?
Good to have you, Jimmy.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Crystalline.
It was great to have you. And Barry, if you're listening, thank you so much for your personal sharing. We look forward to all of you joining us next week when Paula comes back as we discuss the topic of transition difficulties. And until next time, I hope you have a wonderful week. And goodbye for now.
God bless.
God bless.